Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits concept podcast. I am Chuck Anderson. As usual on Monday, I have the honor and privilege of having Andrew K. Dewhurst with us from the wonderful Republic of Canada. Do you go by Republic of Canada, Andrew?
We are not a republic.
No, you go by just...
I think of it as a country. I've never actually thought of it as anything more than like a democracy, I suppose. But
so it's not like the University of Miami or anything like that.
No,
or of Ohio State, the Ohio State University. Anyway, Andrew is with us, but we have a special privilege today. We have Walter McMichael with us from the great state of Virginia. How is Walter today?
I'm doing great. I just felt like I needed to hop on one of these podcasts. I've been listening to you guys do it with Paul, my buddy Paul, and we both came over, and I felt like I needed to get on here and argue with you guys.
Well, we do enough of that in the chat room. I've thought of calling Walter our professor of analytics, since he works at a university, I believe, and also since he is more into analytics when it comes to the your back end starters than I am, that's for sure. We've been over that debate a few times already, which is good spirited. That's the whole concept. Walter, what is your Twitter moniker so we can follow you there as well?
Yeah, you can find me at Real Fake Walter.
Real Fake Walter, huh? I like it.
Yeah.
I will definitely make sure to do that myself if I haven't done that already. I'll have to check on that soon enough. Well, as usual, I sent out a concept for today, and the concept for today was all about younger players. And that concept, to be exact, was as the game gets younger, it's more important than ever to gauge the overall stock and potentials of rookies within the game. Do you agree with this concept, Walter?
Oh, yeah. I think that if you can properly pick up the correct young players, the ones that are truly going to take the step forward, they're just major game changers so far. I mean, you have some guys listed there that, and some of them have provided a major boost to teams, but like last year, Cody Bellinger, Aaron Judge. I guess Luis Severino wasn't a rookie, but he was still a young player that made a major step forward and provided ace numbers. I think if you can correctly identify it, you have a major step ahead of your opponents.
And you must agree as well, Andrew. This is probably the most banality I've offered in a concept all year. Sorry you have to be on for this, Walter. But anyway, Andrew, you must agree with this as well, right?
I do, and I think this actually, like for me personally, accounts for one of the biggest changes that I've made in how I play fantasy baseball over the last few years. Is that like I used to be the guy that avoided rookies because you couldn't trust them, and it's the game's kind of out of place now where like you can avoid them if you want, but you're going to lose, or you're likely to lose it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's funny because last year sort of in the NBA this happened as well. It seems to be a trend that maybe we'll see across sports, although the NFL hasn't quite caught up yet. I mean, I just think there's a steeper learning curve in the jump in that sport. But regardless of that, I asked everybody to rank the six rookies. Very recently, they were pretty much minor leaguers, all of them. So the question being, do we have a unanimous number one? Does everybody have Juan Soto as the number one guy that I gave them?
So is this just strictly for this season?
No, it's for this season and beyond. Does that mean that you'd be willing to go with Ronald Acuna over Soto in the long term?
Yes, I would, personally. I love Juan Soto. I think I'm probably one of the bigger Juan Soto fans long term. But I just think that Acuna, he provides similar power plus the stolen bases. And I just don't think – I don't think Soto's – bat can overtake Acuna's overall performance.
Well, that's a great starting point there. Andrew, do you agree with that?
I do, actually. I would also I would also be taking Acuna over Soto.
So you guys, if you were drafting for next year right now, would you be willing to take Acuña over Soto? And am I wrong in thinking that I think Soto would probably go earlier in ADP? What do you think about that, Andrew? You think Soto would go over Acuña right now?
That's really hard to gauge. I don't know. Like, it depends on the person. Like, I can, depending on how seasons finish, and I think that's going to be a larger portion of what people look at into ADP. Like, if you had to, if I was just doing a draft tomorrow, I'm taking Acuña because I like having players that deliver five categories. And that's for how I like to build a team. That's more important to me than necessarily, like Soto's profile is very good. And I see them both probably going inside of, I don't know, the top, what, 50, 75 for sure. So I think some of it's going to be a little bit of flavor. And I also expect next year, one of the things that we should be more careful about is, and this may be a positive and a negative at the same time, is that Bryce Harper likely isn't in Washington. So that may provide Soto a better place in the batting order. It may also provide less runs to drive in.
I'm pretty sure that Soto hit cleanup yesterday in the second part. He also hit 20 home runs yesterday, if you consider the fact that his first home run was in a makeup game before he was a major league player. So he hit 20 home runs yesterday, which is pretty impressive performance, I think. He had five career home runs before going to the four levels this year, and now he has 20 home runs across all the levels. So his K percentage is 20%, but his walk percentage is over 12.5%. So those are pretty outstanding numbers. Ronald Acuña, despite having a .345 BABIP, had a .265 batting average. Nearly 8% walk rate with a 29% K rate. Now Acuña is only 20 years old, as is Soto. I do find it interesting that you guys are so much higher. Seem to be very. A very have a bunch of vindication. You are confirming with quite a bit of fortitude that you would prefer Acuña over Soto. I find that interesting because I personally would prefer Soto overall. I don't like the
I wouldn't
28% K rate
say,
so
oh.
far. I mean, which is unfair. It's unfair for, such a small sample for me to, but I don't like the 28% K rate is what I'm downgrading Acuña for a little bit. Walter, you disagree with me about that?
No, I would say that I'm not fully vindicated on it. I love Juan Soto. I could easily see him being more valuable than Acuña. There's without a doubt that it could happen. And I honestly think Gleyber Torres could be the most valuable of the three, too. They're all young studs, and I could see it going any way, any order of the three. But right now, I would take Ronald Acuña.
Okay, and I couldn't blame anybody for it. I mean, one thing about trying to gauge these younger players is, we always say that prospect growth is not linear, and now we are seeing prospect growth at the major league level. So, can I confirm that we all have Gleyber Torres as the number three player that was listed on here? And I added the extra moniker or the extra question of, is Gleyber Torres a top five second baseman next year? Second base has kind of lost some shine as far as some injuries happening to some major players. What do you think? Top five second baseman next year for Gleyber Torres? Too heavy there, Walter?
I think that's about right. I mean, second base, I guess you'll have Altuve above him for sure. Am I missing anyone? I guess Albies ahead of him, but I think it sounds about right to me.
Yeah, it'll be curious because Albies does have to have a little rebound. I mean, he started out hot as a pistol, and what maybe we will be questioning exactly how much power there actually is in Albies. Not that Albies isn't going to be a highly drafted and highly touted player next year, because I'm sure he is. What do you think over there, Andrew? You think Gleyber's a top five second baseman next year?
I think he's definitely going to get drafted that way. There's just not a lot of depth at second base at the moment. I mean, because you're going to be looking at D. Gordon falling out of second base, Jose Ramirez falling out of second base. So, you're really looking at what Altuve, Scooter Gennett, like Ozzie Albies. Are we going to consider Whit? I don't think we're ready to call Whit Merrifield a top five second baseman, are we? So, yeah.
I think it'll be tough because like you said, they're just such a different player. He's such a different player than like D. Gordon or Whit Merrifield. You're going to have to decide what kind of team, like really what kind of team you're building. Because, I mean, D. Gordon and Whit are high stolen base guys. So it's just completely different. It's so hard to say which player you'd want more because it's more like a team context.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I always like to look at the game log because we have a tendency to look at the overall numbers for these players. And despite Gleyber Torres is just 21 years old, he only has one multi-hit game since June 2nd, and he's 10 for 54 in that stretch. And he has K'd in 13 of his last 15 games. Now, I don't want to overstate that either. I do think a lot of times with these younger players coming up, there's this adjustment factor that we're trying to figure out. I mean, we're certainly getting that out of Bellinger this year. There's a lot of talk on other outlets that maybe the Dodgers have been trying to tinker with his swing too much, considering he's such a young player and he's seen such a tremendous amount of success already. His high total for home runs before this year in the minors was 11. But as I'm often taken to in these conversations, it's hard to know exactly if that means anything. I mean, you're looking at years when he was 17, 18, 19 years old, trying to guesstimate exactly how much power he's going to have. And, this is often folly, to say the least. I remember James Loney and Matt Kemp coming up in the Dodgers system and us trying to figure out, which player was going to have more power. And James Loney basically never developed any power whatsoever. So it's far from an exact science as well. But Gleyber Torres, I do think, ends up being a top five second baseman next year. I agree with that.
I'll offer this piece to this argument, though, about him definitely being third, is that I don't know if it's that definite. I think when you look at what Gleyber has done comparatively to what Teoscar Hernandez has done, it's pretty similar. So I think... and I think if anything, there might be some more stability to around the underlying stats to Teoscar Hernandez. So I think there's actually a case to be made that given outfield depth and the need for more outfielders, that like from a pure draft perspective, that Teoscar could be more valuable to next year.
Yeah, and I'm glad you started on Teoscar because being in Canada, I figured you would have, the extra incentive to watch more Blue Jays games. Do you watch most of the Blue Jays games, by the way, Andrew?
I don't. Almost none, actually.
Oh, well, that's a good thing. Good thing I threw that. I threw that right in your wheelhouse then.
I mean, I don't watch tons of Blue Jays games, but most people I know are Blue Jays fans, and obviously, like, the local media exclusively covers the Blue Jays, so I'm obviously aware of what's happening with the team at a more... with more intimacy than most, I suppose.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention is that I'm wondering exactly how wide open that lineup is going to be next year. I mean, it's conceivable that Teoscar Hernandez hits third next year.
I think he's largely hitting like in the top four right now.
Yeah. And, Donaldson, you got to figure, is unlikely to return. Or if he does return, that means that he failed miserably the rest of this year. And Justin Smoak seems to be sort of, I hate to say, put a smoke up in the air pun, but is certainly not somebody that we can necessarily bank on for middle of the lineup production. Next year, he could find himself hitting fifth or sixth pretty easily if he doesn't turn around his season this year. The opposite of Gleyber Torres, Teoscar Hernandez has hit safely in 10 of his last 14 games with six multi-hit games. But he also went through a slump. He started out the season not playing all that much. I was kind of surprised how early he made the team, actually, considering they added Granderson and Randall Grichuk, who is heating up a little bit right now. But it seems like Granderson is not playing as much now, and they seem to be committed to trying to get a little bit younger. What is your take on Teoscar Hernandez, Walter? Are you as high on him as myself and Mr. Dewhurst?
Yeah, I actually really like Teoscar Hernandez, but I do think he's clearly behind the top three. I know that we're saying that, yes, if you look at their statistics for just this year, they there's not much of a difference, but you got to understand Gleyber Torres is a 21-year-old who barely has any plate appearances in the minor leagues, and he's just coming up and raking in the majors. Whereas Teoscar Hernandez, I believe he's 26.
25, yeah.
25, yeah, so he's a little bit older, and I understand he's still young, but the difference between a 21-year-old raking in the majors and a 25-year-old is pretty significant. And Teoscar Hernandez, he's a Statcast darling. I mean, he just barrels up the ball all the time, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was the most valuable just for this year, because like you said, he's hitting, I believe he's mainly been hitting leadoff for the Blue Jays, and he crushes the ball when he gets a hold of it. So it wouldn't surprise me if he was the best for this year, but long term, he's a clear fourth place for me.
Well, I think certainly long term, I would have to agree with that. I think the variation that we're having here is, you know, thinking about maybe just next year versus just the long term. And I would never have any problem with somebody taking Gleyber Torres over Teoscar Hernandez. I would certainly understand their thought process next year, so I don't have a big issue with it. It's kind of interesting because we haven't talked a lot about Teoscar Hernandez on this pod, and I haven't heard a lot of talk on other outlets about him. And he's really having a very nice year for a rookie season.
He's on my TGFBI team. He's been a nice addition. He was a guy that actually me and Paul were pretty big on last year when he got traded from the Astros to the Blue Jays. So I've always really liked Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that the Astros are not only, you know, going on, you know, double-digit win streaks, but they've also distributed all these players that we talk about on a regular basis. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, it's a Domingo Santana. At once every year, there seems like there's a different breakout player that literally came from that system. So it's no wonder that Josh Hader. Yeah, no wonder Jeff Luhnow has signed an extension, I believe, yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a brilliant, brilliant executive, or has been in recent times anyway.
Yeah, so, I'll put it this way. Like, how many times would you, like, how many organizations would trading Teoscar Hernandez for Francisco Liriano not be an unmitigated disaster?
Yeah, because
and it's crazy because their system is still, like, loaded. Like, they just have so many pitchers and prospects just breaking out in the minors that they don't have space for yet.
Yeah, they have a third baseman, I believe, who went on, like, is in the mid-30s of a game hit streak, and I basically had never even heard of them because their system is so deep. Cesar, is that his last name? But anyway, it is pretty crazy. They're like, they are right now to the rest of Major League Baseball, kind of what California is to all of baseball. Meaning if you look at where most Major League players are from, it seems like, this is an exaggeration, obviously, it seems like 95% of them are from California. And right now, if you look at major prospects, it seems like a lot of them around the game have ties somehow or another to Houston. So that is pretty amazing. I do think, you know, I agree wholeheartedly with both points that Teoscar Hernandez might be getting overlooked a little bit just because how poorly the Blue Jays are pitching this year. If they were pitching like they did a couple years ago and Donaldson was playing well, I think he would be far, far greater in the spotlight than he is right now, which I think is part of what Andrew was getting at. But Gleyber Torres has potential growth spurt here over the next couple years that could make him a perennial top 20 player, and I don't think Hernandez quite has that upside. Would you agree with that, Andrew?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think Hernandez is ever going to be a top 20 player, and I mean, I'm not necessarily certain that Gleyber is either. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that, I mean, a lot of prospect people, including our own Matt Thompson, didn't think, Justin was on this bandwagon as well, is that Gleyber would be a better major league player than he would a fantasy player. And right now it just hasn't worked that way. And I think there's, like, just when I dug into Gleyber's numbers a little bit further, like, there's going to be regression. He's not going to, I don't think he's hitting 35 home runs. Like, he's not going to maintain his 25% home run to fly ball rate. Like, that's going to likely come back down to earth. Maybe it doesn't, but, I think regression is going to come, but I mean, moving forward, I think there's more reason to be hopeful that Gleyber Torres is a superstar than Teoscar Hernandez.
Well, you know, and I've gone over and over on this, and I almost hate to get up on the soapbox again, but it sure seems like from a hitting standpoint, middle infielders are excessively difficult for us to gauge. And, you know, and I use Xander Bogaerts' odd prospect growth. I use Francisco Lindor. I remember Francisco Lindor was not far removed from being considered a J.P. Crawford-like bat when he was in the minors. Maybe he hit for a little bit better average, but no one saw the power that we've gotten out of Francisco Lindor. And
He's called Anderson Simmons.
Yeah.
That's what he was called when he was in the minors. He was called the Andrelton Simmons.
So, I mean, I certainly, like I said, this just reiterates Walter's point that, you know, I think Gleyber Torres has a much better chance to be a superstar than Teoscar Hernandez. But I also think Gleyber Torres has a better chance to be a more frustrating player over the next few years than Teoscar Hernandez. Teoscar Hernandez, like Andrew said, there's some stability in knowing, having a good idea how much value he has. Now, we'll learn a lot more about Gleyber Torres the rest of this season. I think that's very fair to say. But at the same time, right now we have one big power outburst, you know, kind of like what we have with Albies. We have one big power stretch. Now, let's see if he backs it up with some consistent power the rest of the season. Then we'll have a little bit better of a glimpse into what maybe we have going forward. Because Gleyber Torres, you know, rightfully, as Andrew said, he was not a slam dunk prospect. You know, because most middle infielders are largely coveted for their glove work when they're younger, and it pushes them through systems a little bit faster even than we see in corner outfield or corner infield situations. Well, let's quickly touch on some other guys here. I have Austin Meadows at number five, and I'm wondering if you guys, let's do it as an Austin Meadows versus Miguel Andujar. Let's do it as a comparison between the two. My big question is, what are we doing with these guys going forward? I mean, I think health is the big question with Meadows, and I think maybe the lack of fantasy kind of stats is the issue with Miguel Andujar. So, what do we think? Well, let's start with you, Walter. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I really like Andujar. One of the reasons I think that Torres has a lot of staying power and Andujar as well is because of that. Just that lineup. I mean, it's ridiculous. The lineup they're hitting in, it's like, I mean, you have Judge, Stanton, Sanchez, Didi, Andujar, Torres, Hicks. It's like they just keep coming at you and coming at you, and they're just going to pile up those counting stats. I mean, I know Andujar has pretty insane counting stats for what he's done so far this year. And so I think I'm definitely higher on him than I am like Teoscar Hernandez, who I still like. The problem that I'm having is I really do like Teoscar Hernandez. I just like these other guys more. Austin Meadows, I've never really been a big fan of. Like, I don't think he has I know, like you said, Chuck, that a lot of people question Torres' power, but I think we've kind of underrated players that have what people would put as elite hit tools. Like, they can just put the barrel on the ball, and with the juice ball in baseball right now, the ball just flies out. We're seeing it with Lindor, we're seeing it with Jose Ramirez, Gleyber Torres, I mean, Ozzie Albies was even putting up power numbers, and that guy's a pretty tiny guy, just barreling up balls, and they're just flying out. So, and the problem with Meadows is I don't think he has that hit tool that all these other guys have, and his power is just kind of mediocre, speed's mediocre. It's like it's not really a profile I really want. He can be like a batting average stabilizer, but nothing too fancy.
Well, I mean, there's certainly, you know, we have 81 games all of last year for Austin Meadows, and he had 5 home runs only in them. He had 87 games in 2016, so health is definitely a concern. It is sort of a fascinating compare and contrast because Austin Meadows was the 9th overall pick in 2013, and Miguel Andujar is not somebody that we've considered an elite prospect until maybe the last, you know, not even an elite prospect, but we thought of him as a good prospect over the last year. But Austin Meadows was one of those guys that when he was drafted was kind of considered a surefire major leaguer. I believe he got drafted very similarly to Clint Frazier, who's a guy who should be on this list if he wasn't buried in New York. But I'm curious, Andrew, what are your take on these two guys? And am I over projecting Austin Meadows?
I don't know. Like, the biggest thing with Austin Meadows is, like, will the health come is, I think, largely the biggest question around him. You know, obviously, I mean, we've talked about the checkered past of, you know, with his health, only played 32 games last year, 72 the year before, or I guess it's probably more like 80 the year before. But, like, he's had some issues, and that's really been a problem for him. I don't like how little he walks, at least in the last couple years. Like, right now he's only walking 4%. I like both their contact numbers. Like, I like that they're both hitting, making contact more than 80% of the time. Andujar's making contact in the zone like 91% of the time, which is something you love to see on a team where getting on base in a lot of cases means scoring runs. So he does offer a lot of value that way. I mean, trying to put kind of bring some of these guys into context of, like, what would I think of them next year come draft time is, I feel like I would probably value Meadows higher than Andujar. Just from the perspective of, I think he, like, Meadows does a whole bunch of things really well, but nothing spectacularly. Where Andujar does slightly less things well, and you're going to need less of the third base commodity than you would of an outfield commodity. I also wonder with both Andujar and Torres is how much of their value is directly tied to being a Yankee, and if that situation changed, would we think of these players much differently? Because of, I think we would see some regression in their overall stat lines, but I mean, that's probably a little bit of food for thought for a different time.
Well, I would like to mention that I like all these players on this list a great deal. But I want to mention a little bit about Andujar. You know, he's just got a 314 OBP with less than 4% walk rate himself. I understand he's really large counting numbers right now, which is great. I'm questioning his future role on the team. I always expect the Yankees to turn into the old Yankees. Meaning, you know, if there was a way they could finagle Mike Moustakas onto their team at the trade deadline this year and, you know, stay under the salary cap, I think they probably would. And in the offseason, there's a question of if they would move Miguel Andujar back into some kind of more of a utility role, which I don't think he deserves. I'm not saying that should happen, but I'm wondering organizationally if that's possible. I mean, Gleyber Torres is the guy on the team that's the young prospect that's got his spot, you know, certainly there. But traditionally, the Yankees have not saved 2-3 spots for prospect growth. That's not something they've done. And all of a sudden, they're going to be unleashed this offseason salary-wise. That's what would scare me a little bit about Andujar. I also want to mention, you know, that not only has his plate discipline been bad, but he's only drawn a walk in three of his last 17 games. And he's got 4-0-for-4s in his last six games, which, again, is putting a microscope on something that needs a macroscope, as far as, you know, these guys are going to be making adjustments. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. I really like Miguel Andujar, but I wonder if his role is as stable in New York as we might first think it should be. Like any other team, it would be really stable, but is it stable in New York? Do you think that's unfair, Walter?
Yeah.
Or do you think that's fair?
I think it's somewhat fair, but I think Cashman has shown that the way he's running the Yankees, it's not like the old Yankees. Like, the old Yankees last year would have just ponied up all their prospects and tried to win it last year. And they were a game away from the World Series without doing that. So I think they're going to take a slow, methodical process because they have all their young players are still cheap, and they're going to figure out, like, what Andujar is, what Torres is. If they're building blocks, then they're going to build around them. And I think Andujar, I don't think he has bad plate discipline. I think he's just a really aggressive hitter. He's kind of like the like Adam Jones type, where it's like, I think if they became more patient, they would actually become worse players. Whereas I think he's going to hit around like 270 to 280, but his OBP is going to be bad. So obviously you got to knock him a little bit in OBP leagues, but I think he's going to maintain a good batting average. And what Andrew said, where it's like they get a bump it being on the Yankees, I do think that is kind of a thing, but it's like that lineup is pretty ridiculous. It's, you kind of have to give them, like, I generally don't like discount or give a bump to players because of like lineup protection or any of that. But I mean, certain lineups are really, really good, like Yankees, Astros, Red Sox. Those lineups are stacked.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, I strongly doubt that you're going to see the Yankees take much of a step back offensively last year. I mean, you could even make the case that Gary Sanchez has struggled most of this year. Stanton had an adjustment period, and they're still creating incredible peripheral numbers for their players. I mean, there was some confusion going into the year exactly what spot on the team Andujar was going to have, and you know, that had a lot to do with them bringing over the infielder from Arizona, and had a lot to do with maybe wondering exactly how much Walker was going to play as well, who they brought in. But those are not traditional Yankee moves. I think you can make a pretty strong argument for what Walter is saying. I just wonder if they could see the prize, and if they would, within season, maybe not traditional Yankee way, like right now, adding Mike Moustakas is not the traditional Yankee way because he's only on a one-year deal anyway, via Kansas City. And I'm not trying to say that I think that's going to happen this year. But if they had no salary constraints, would they be willing to do that if they thought that would put them over the top for winning the World Series this year? I think Walter's point is certainly intact. I think that Cashman is going to go about it much differently than sort of the Steinbrenner overseeing the puppeteer era that there was in Yankees baseball. But I think these guys are really fascinating. I want to mention one more thing about Austin Meadows. Do you think the context on Pittsburgh next year could actually help him? Meaning, you would think that they would have to look at their organization and decide that they need to really see exactly what they have in Meadows, and it sort of will clear a path for Meadows to have a more full role, because right now, even despite them losing Andrew McCutchen in the offseason, it seems like their outfield is a little crowded. Do you think Meadows could actually get a boost from what happens in Pittsburgh next year, sort of a wide-open lineup? You see that, Andrew, or no?
It's hard to say, right? Like, the reason why I'm tentative is, like, for that to, I think, truly happen, the Pirates have to move a piece. And I think the most likely piece to get moved, if you're looking to maximize return, is probably going to be Starling Marte. So it's like when you start taking away pieces out of that lineup, yes, he would get greater opportunities, but in a much, like, in a significantly worse lineup potentially, if that's really possible in Pittsburgh. But I think there would be pros and cons to it. Like, yes, opportunity obviously for him is going to be ideal, and it's not unforeseeable for sure. Like, you wouldn't be surprised if they move Dickerson and or Marte as well, to create the space and also to maximize the prospect return to try to rebuild for the next time they've got the opportunity to make a run at this. So I would just be mindful of that, and that it's, you know, him necessarily getting more opportunity doesn't necessarily create great fantasy value.
Yeah, you know, Andrew, you should be a politician, because the proper words there is the proper words are Pittsburgh is generally cheap as hell. And if they had really invested in their team a couple years ago when they were stacked with Gerrit Cole, maybe they would have a different flag flying around center field than they do. I think you know, I'm being overly harsh about it, you know, but I think you were being overly nice about it, which is one of the things that I admire about you, because nobody really thinks I'm a nice person, which is okay. It's kind of a persona I've developed, I guess. Anyway, this was a really great conversation, and it was cut a little bit short by a couple little technical issues that we had starting up the podcast. But it was certainly a pleasure having Walter on to discuss how we rank some players, some former prospects that are really coming into their own now at the major league level. Walter, thanks for bringing nature with us as well. We appreciate that. Maybe that helped everyone. It helps everyone relax, right? That's soothing. It's like they're listening to the mating sound of the killer whales in the background, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going for. I figured we're gonna have a little more argument, but maybe next time we'll have to talk about Kershaw or something. That'll really get us going.
You got that right. And see, I'm probably far less abrasive actually talking to than I am in the chat room. I think the staff chat room is made for debate, and Justin has had to scold me a couple times for maybe being a little too combative or a little too harsh with my opinions. Give us that. Give us the real fake Twitter name. Give us the real fake Twitter name one more time for us, Walter, so we can sure and follow you.
It is at real fake Walter. It's a solid Twitter name.
It is solid. I like my Twitter name as well. My Twitter name is just Chucking It from my former sports blog, but I think it makes sense that I just kind of throw it out there. And Andrew, you're Andrew K. Dewhurst, right?
Yep, at Andrew K. Dewhurst, far and away the worst of the three.
I don't know all about that. I mean, you're branding yourself, sir.
Yeah, I think that I'm branding myself in a way that's really hard to spell.
Well, all right, my friend. I really appreciate the time. Walter, we will certainly have you back on again. I hope you're enjoying the FWFB experience. I know it might be a little looser of a format than you were with Lenny Melnick. Is that true?
Oh, no. Me and Paul just did whatever we wanted.
Oh, well,
so it's the same thing.
you're like renegades, which is cool. No, that makes
we just like to go with the flow. That's all.
Oh, well, that makes you sound pretty cool. Well, I will continue trying to talk Walter, as I certainly enjoy his presence so far on FWFB and in the chat room. I'll continue to try and talk him into the three sport league, and I'm afraid that's a lost cause with Andrew Dewhurst. I think his hockey time means that he wants nothing to do with three other sports. Is that correct, Andrew?
It's not so much that I don't want anything to do with three other sports. It's more that I don't think in the winter I would have enough time to commit to both hockey and basketball.
Wow. If you think we all commit to basketball, you're a little mistaken. But anyway, the point being is that's sort of what I'm doing right now. Is I think it'll be good for the staff, and it'll be very fun to draft a full baseball league within the three sport league in late July and early August. So that's sort of what I'm overseeing right now. But I want to let these guys who are committing some time on their lunch break get back to their real life, and thank them so much for adding to our fantasy lives. We appreciate it. So this has been an FWFB Concept Podcast. Thank you so much for your time and your support.